The starting point of all healing is an inventory. What do you have in your house, so to speak? What strengths do you have? What are your assets? Not just financial or material, but your emotional, mental assets as well. When we can recognize that we do indeed have good and valuable qualities, we can then know we are not starting from ground zero, but have a basis upon which to work. We never ignore what we have. Rather, we start by recognizing it, blessing it, praising it, and watching it multiply to demonstrate more and more of the good that we seek. And it all begins with the question, what do you have in your house? This was the metaphysical question coming from Elijah and Elisha. Now, each prophet came upon a situation, asked a clarifying question, and then began to work with what was already there. And behold, a new condition materialized. Now, there's a life lesson in here. This is all an instruction of what is taking place in our daily lives and how we can go about bringing a healing to our conditions in which we find ourselves. Let's break down the symbolism a bit in each of those passages, and we'll get to the reality of things. For you know, it does us no good to take the Bible literally, but not seriously. And to read it seriously, we must look for the metaphor, the symbol, and grasp the meaning that is there for us. We see the prophet Elijah, a God-inspired man. Well, this is us when we are at our most enlightened or inspired state. At this stage, we are willing and able to look past appearances and follow divine direction. For after all, Elijah was instructed, go see the widow at Zarephath, and a widow woman will look after you. Now the widow, this is us. This is us when we are bereft of all ideas. We are no longer receptive to God inspiration, and further, our ideas themselves, symbolized by her son, well, they are dead or about to die too. And so, what do we say at this point? Well, we say, we give up. Let us make our last meal and die. God, though, intervenes with the word nonsense. We have plenty more days and plenty of inspiration. What do you have to make a meal with? Just a cruse of oil and some meal and two sticks to rub together to make a fire to enjoy the last meal before we die? Is that what we have? No, says Elijah. Make that meal for me. That may sound selfish from a human standpoint, but what he's saying is give the last of your substance, your attention to God, universe, life, inspiration, and watch the action. And when she does that, she devotes her limited substance, she goes on and lives, and she is said to eat many days thereafter. You see, she redirected her thought from her view of limited substance to God, infinite abundance. And from there, she was able to continue to replicate the good. Now, this passage improves when we get to Elisha. Again, he confronts or is confronted by a widow. She says, my husband is dead, meaning no more ideas to feed my receptive nature. So I am dead too soon enough. And worse, the creditor is coming to take my two sons, my ideas. And he's going to make them bound to a material way of living. We know that a material way of living is death itself, as substance is used up and we die. But Elisha, the man of God, won't hear it. The source of inspiration is turned to. And he asks us, as God always asks us, what shall I have in my house? What shall I do for thee, Tell me, what do you have in your house? In other words, tell me your thoughts. Tell me where you are in consciousness. For Elijah is essentially saying, if I can change your consciousness, then I can change your conditions. But of course, this is taking place within us. So it really sounds more like this. You, if you can change your mind about things, you can change your life. And so what happens next? The widow woman answers Elisha. She says, I don't have anything in the house. But that's not true. And we know that's not true because she adds, almost as an afterthought, save for a pot of oil. Well, then Elijah, or God, if you will, or our inspired internal thoughts, if you will, says, well, let's prepare that oil for sale so we can pay the creditors. In other words, pay the debt. Use what you have and pay the debt. And there is always a debt. For as Richard Rohr has said, in the spiritual universe where we live, nothing just goes away. All must be reconciled and accounted for. Elijah knows this. We at our best know this. A debt not only must be paid, but we have the ability to pay it if we turn to what we have. So with full faith and understanding, he instructs her, go, get as many vessels as you can to receive the infinite blessings of the oil, and then you can sell it and pay your creditors and keep your ideas away from material bondage. We see this again played out in the teachings of the master. Once again, a widow woman appears. And once again, there is a lesson in spiritual substance separate and apart from that which appears in material form. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus on a well, and it was about the sixth hour. Notice the change up here. Now it is Jesus, the man of God, the God qualities of man, that is weary as the story opens. And there cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. This time, the widow woman is not down on her luck. Oh no, she's about her business, drawing water for her community. And Jesus says unto her, give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. And the woman of Samaria said to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Look at this. We're now at the point where it is no longer starkly those who have and have not. Here, it is you are a stranger to me and I to you. Why are you asking me for support? Our material conditions are not receptive, but they are hostile to a spiritual way of life. Jesus answered her and said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that says, give me to drink, you would have asked of him and he would have given you living water. You see, if you really knew what you were doing and lived from a spiritual basis, you would not be caught up in material rules and forms and conventions. The woman says to him, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence hast thou that living water? In other words, what she's saying to Jesus is, you don't look like much. Why should I listen to you? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us this well and drank thereof himself, his children, and his cattle? And Jesus answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give shall never thirst. But the water I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up to everlasting life. Ah, here we go. Don't waste your time consuming substance that runs out. Don't waste your time on material conditions. They're here today and they're gone tomorrow. Even though your ancestors taught you this, the lessons have lost their spirit or their savor. The woman saith to him, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. And Jesus said to her, Go call thy husband and come hither. Go call the ideas to whom you have previously given credence erroneously. And let's correct that thought, as well as the condition that arises from it. And the woman answered, saying, I have no husband. But Jesus says to her, Baloney, you have five husbands. And he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that you said truly. He's talking about the senses here. The five material senses of materiality have been ruling this woman's life and ours as well. And the person to whom she now gives credence and belief, that's no husband, no source of any good ideas. So the woman now says to him, Sir, I perceive thou art a prophet. Now here is our clue that this whole scene is a metaphor for us to derive a lesson that spirit, ideas, what we have in our consciousness. That's what we have to work with, a prophet. The writer is reminiscing of Elijah and Elisha. Those were the key prophets to the Jewish people who were hearing this. They would have heard this passage. They would have understood what was happening. Our fathers, she continues, worshiped in this mountain, and you say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. And Jesus said to her, Woman, believe me, the hour comes when you shall neither in this mountain nor at Jerusalem worship the Father. The true worshipers worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And the woman said to him, I know that Messiah comes, which is called Christ, and when he comes, he will tell us all things. And Jesus outs himself, I that speak unto thee am he. And upon this came his disciples and said, Why are you talking to this woman? The woman then left with her water pot and went her way into the city and said to the men, Come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is this not the Christ? In the meantime, his disciples said, Master, eat. But he said to them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore, the disciples said to one another, Who brought him food? And Jesus said, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. My substance, my goal is to do the will of the Father, to live spiritually, to know that what is in consciousness, in my consciousness, will soon be made manifest. In Divine Science, its principle and practice, we read the following. Man has unknowingly made his conditions of life and affairs. He is to work out his state of perfection. And this is done by recognition of his true self through right thinking and right speaking. The law of expression, fully understood, is of the greatest value to us. It is the way by which we have come forth, and we need to apply it for the purpose of realizing our true and harmonious relationship, not only with our source and cause, but with humanity. In other words, we need to examine what is in our house. And what do we do when we go rooting around in our house and in our consciousness? We're not going in there for nothing. We're not going in there for nothing. And unlike the widow woman, what we usually find is not that we are bereft of ideas, but rather that our head is filled with junk. Our old ideas have created the very causes and conditions that we recoil from, and if not abhorrent, we would least like to make a change. You know, from our church this morning, about a block away, is the Georgetown Flea Market. And there you can find just about every piece, product, household wares that other people have chosen to clean from their house. In other words, junk. And what we need to do is we need to be like those at the flea market. Now, not the buyers, I'm talking about the sellers, those who have cleaned house, those who have had a cosmic spiritual house cleaning, getting rid of their old junk. Let's get rid of our old ideas so that we can make way for receiving new ones, more healthy ones, more spiritual ones. And receiving those changes, our consciousness changes, our beliefs change, and in turn, our actions are different. And then we begin to experience different conditions. Why? Because we have asked the simple clarifying question, what is in our house? And rather than settle on the answer, we did something with it. We chose to get rid of what we saw, to get rid of our old ideas. Dr. Henry Cloud, a psychologist and leadership coach, wrote a book called Necessary Endings. In that book, he comments on the exercise of pruning. There are three reasons to prune, he says. One, a plant that has too many buds can only nurture so many to bring them to their full potential. So you prune the bush in order for the bush to thrive and to allow the healthy buds to blossom. The second reason to prune is because some branches of the bush may be sick or diseased. And lastly, removing the diseased branches gives healthy blooms and blossoms and branches room and an unobstructed path to grow. So you see, it is quite simple enough to say, what is in my thought? And focus on the good. And then, though, you have to do the pruning. There are old or bad thoughts in there that need to be eradicated, and they must be completely eradicated. This is what the master was talking about in the Sermon on the Mount. How blessed you are if the old ways are dying. A new and better life is just around the corner for you. Just around the corner. Should we take a few moments now to rest and contemplate and make this lesson practical? Let's close our eyes. Let's take in one or two cleansing breaths and just relax. Empty your mind of all your difficulties. Quiet your thoughts of anything of this world. Any thoughts of this world will be right there for you in just a few minutes, should you choose to return to them. So for right now, at least, we can let go. We can let go of all thoughts that we had right up until the time we closed our eyes. And dwell on this statement of Jesus. Sell all that you have and follow me. Remove what is in your consciousness. Remove that which is material. Let your mind roam freely. Follow me. What does this mean? Follow God. Let God be in control. Seek only to do the will of the Master. Now that our mind is cleared, let's go back and take a look. What's in your house? What is in your consciousness? Is there anything other than thoughts of God? Allow your mind to be so full with thoughts of God that there is no room for anything else. What you have in mind that is good, follow it, multiply it. It will take care of you. It is yours. It is your substance. It is indeed your firm foundation. You can indeed put your hope in it. There is no fear or concern at all, for God is here, right here with us. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within and acknowledge him, so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen. Remember to remove the junk from your house and have a blessed week.